The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Welcome to Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peter's going to join me here in about a half hour or so. Always a good time to talk transportation and more. He had a great article I was reading last night in which he was actually talking. We'll talk more about this in about a half hour. That the Pontiac Aztec, we can actually appreciate the Pontiac Aztec now. Remember that that ugly kind of SUV thing that was introduced on Survivor, CBS Survivors? They gave one away, I think, back then. And all that. And it didn't particularly sell well. It wasn't actually a bad little SUV sort of four-wheel drive thing, but it was kind of ugly, kind of weird looking. Not The Honda Element, I think, was a better-looking SUV in that particular era, but still even it kind of looked like a Tonka truck with the big plastic panels and things like that. But needless to say, he actually has a new appreciation of it because of the engine that you can no longer get today. But we'll talk about that and more and other things going on here. Kevin Starrett, I haven't talked to him for a few weeks, from Oregon Firearms Federation. He's actually coming out against a bill that the bunch of Republicans have introduced to allow them to conceal carry within the Capitol, but not allowing the regular little people to do so, because the state legislature ended up banning that a couple of years ago, probably understanding that people were really getting even angrier at the democratically controlled legislature. So I know what we're going to do. We're going to stop the most law-abiding people from carrying within the state capitol. Anyway, we'll have a little conversation about that and other craziness going on in the legislative session. Danny Sheehan, who is, a famed UFO lawyer, has been involved, not a lawyer for UFO, but he's been an attorney that has been suing the government for getting disclosure, doing all sorts of things like this for a number of years. And I think his institute is New Paradigm Institute. And he is coming on the show 8 o'clock hour because he's going to be putting on a seminar at Southern Oregon University in mid-March. And it's kind of a donation thing. You know, you have a donation to get in there to defray the expenses and things. And he's going to be talking about the UAPs and the unidentified objects and other things like that, and the government disclosure, which seems to be moving forward. So we'll kind of pick his brain after 8 o'clock. I'm looking forward to it. And he's an interesting attorney. He has law degrees, longer than my arm, all that kind of stuff. And I've talked to him. Pretty interesting. I think we'll just see what he has to say coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. All right. And let's see. What else we got going on? Well, the big, beautiful bill. At least the beginning start of the big, beautiful bill got passed yesterday. It was a very close vote, 217 to 213. It was a lot of drama last night. And the Trump's budget resolution ended up passing. So it's moving. This is including a lot of stuff, including no taxes on tips, no taxes on Social Security benefits, et cetera, et cetera. It would also raise the federal debt limit $4 trillion, and I know. It's like, all right, this is the big beautiful bill. We're going to really crank down on the spending. Well, all I can say is that when you're going to raise the federal debt limit $4 trillion, you are serious about cutting spending. And by the way, this is a joint effort. It's not just President Trump what President Trump wants. It's all of them, but. The party line vote, 217 to 213. Three House members abstained. So we had 212 Democrats voted no on this, all right? Representative Thomas Massie, the Republican from Kentucky, was the only Republican who had voted no. He was the only one who voted no. He said, and this is what he said, this is in the town hall, if the Republican plan passes under the rosiest assumptions, which aren't even true, we're going to add $328 billion to the deficit this year, we're going to add $295 billion to the deficit the year after that, and $242 billion, this is adding to the deficit, after that, Massie said. Why would I vote for that? Now, apparently, Representative Massey, Congressman Massey, just does not understand playing chess. Because I mentioned stuff like that a little bit like this on my social media post. Because to me, the way that you cut spending is that you just cut spending. And I would have thought they were more serious if I had heard something like, okay, we're only going to raise the debt ceiling a couple trillion dollars, or maybe even a trillion, maybe just a trillion. But we're still going, boom, we've automatically assumed that we're going to blow through everything and we're going to borrow another $4 trillion. And that's just kind of the way I'm looking at it. The way that you stop spending is that you just have to stop spending. You can't politically BS this sort of situation. And when I'm looking at the bond markets, I think it's always important to look at the Treasury markets, the bond markets, which seem to be flashing that they're not buying this fighting against inflation. In fact, what the bond markets seem to be indicating right now is that what is going to be moving forward is recessionary and inflationary. MishTalk.com has a pretty good article on that if you want to take a look at it. I like Mish because Mike Shedlock is his name, actually. And he writes on these sort of things is that, you know, he votes for Trump, but, you know, he didn't give Trump his brain, you know, that sort of thing. And there's when it comes to the spending, the money people just look at this and go, yeah, you can't baffle us, that sort of thing. But like I said, this is just the beginning, though, because remember, it has to get negotiated with the Senate, and it goes back and forth in conference, in committee, and then, chances are they're really going to be able to cut the deficit and they won't have to raise the debt ceiling as much. I'm sure that's what's going to come. I can't even say that. I can't say that with a straight face. All right, so the bottom line is that everyone's just trying to get the big, beautiful bill passed, and we'll see. I mean, right now, all we could do is just, we're talking about hypotheticals right now. I was talking to my boss this morning, George, and I said, George, if they're going to not tax tips, which I understand, I mean, it used to be that tips were not taxed before, you know, back about the 1980s or so, people in the restaurants did not pay taxes on tips. I remember my first wife, Jerry, was working the late night at Denny's over on North 205th Street, North Seattle, and she worked the night shift, and she'd bring home a big pile of quarters and dollar bills and things, and paid the electric bill, kept things going, and we didn't declare that. We didn't declare that at the time. That's assuming that the homeless people didn't come in there and dine and dash. Even then, Seattle had a homeless problem at that point. People just come in there and order the Grand Slam and then slam their way out the door, you know, that kind of thing. But as a matter of law, it's never made sense to me to claim that tips weren't part of your income. I've just never been able to see how anybody now if you work in the restaurant business, maybe you can explain this, because everybody would know, okay, well, the pay working in the restaurant might not be all that great, but you make it up in tips, they would say. Well, if you're making it up in tips, that's then considered, you know, part of your income. And the fact that now they want to go back to saying, well, this is just a gift. And now if they're going to do this, where people working in the restaurants don't have to pay taxes on the tips, I would like to have about half of my salary as a tip. You know, every month I'll get my, paycheck stub from the boss, you know, that kind of thing. And Bi-Coastal Media says, okay, Bill, here's half your pay. Oh, and here's a tip. and here's a tip. This is to ensure proper service, right? That kind of thing. I would like that. That's the only problem I have with this, in which it treats different types of wage slaves differently in the tax world. I know I will be shouted down. I get this, but you know, if we're going to say that someone just wants to give you money as a tip, that's okay. Then why couldn't I have my negotiate for a tip from my boss and just say, hey, boss, how much you want to tip me this month? Of course, they could be dangerous, you know. it could be, you know, how well I have. Well, you know, you did okay last week. Yeah, but then you brought me up on the air talking about me on the tips. You're not getting a tip this month. Better knock it off. All right. So anyway, this is where we're going at. It's the beginning of the negotiating process on the budget. The market's reacting to it. They're thinking that this is both recessionary and inflationary. It's the way they're looking at it, because the borrowing will still continue to go up and up and up. And so we had 212 Democrats voting against it and Thomas Massey voting against it. Now, I will translate. What this means is that 212 Democrats would never vote for this because it is Trump's bill. Okay? Doesn't matter. Orange man bad. We're not going to vote for him. Thomas Massey voted no against this budget bill because he can actually add and subtract, and we'll talk about it, which means he's committing a great faux pas in Washington, D.C., which is telling the truth about budget bills and deficits and things like that. So that's how I see it. What about you? This is the Bill Myers Show, 621 on KMED.
You can nominate your favorite business in Bi-Coastal Media's annual 2025 Best of Southern Oregon. Nominations for Southern Oregon's Best begins March 12th. You can visit bestofsouthernoregon.com to browse the current magazine and get ideas on what businesses you'd like to nominate to win gold or silver in this year's edition, publishing in August. Nominations start March 12th at bestofsouthernoregon.com. That's bestofsouthernoregon.com. Presented by Dusty's Transmissions.
Joel here at Butherford and Truck Center. And you know how I spell transparency? I-N-V-O-I-C-E. Invoice, as in how we now post the invoice on every single new Ford every day. While other dealers only show you the suggested retail price and make you negotiate for a discount, at Butler Ford, you'll see the posted invoice right away, and we'll talk about a price that's fair to both of us. Let's face it, we're all busy. Let's use transparency, aka invoice, to make the car deal go faster. Come on down to Butler Ford, walk the lot, and see the invoices posted on all the vehicles. That's my F-150 Super Duty's Escapes. Yeah, the invoices are posted. Broncos and Rangers, Explorers and Expeditions, even Mustangs and Mach-Es. Invoices posted. It's not just a better way to buy. It's a more friendly and magnanimous experience. And you know how to spell magnanimous?
Yeah, me either.
Come see us at Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes down the freeway in Ashland, off of exit 19, where you already know. We've got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned, and all invoices posted on our new cars.
It's time to throw your overpriced big wireless contract overboard. With a qualifying plan, you can choose an iPhone 14 or a Samsung Galaxy for $0. Pure Talk's U.S. customer service team will make the switch in as little as 10 minutes. No hassle, no gimmicks, just honest-to-goodness wireless price right. Dial #250, you say the keywords Pure Talk, claim your new iPhone or Galaxy with a qualifying purchase from Pure Talk, which is America's wireless company. Visit puretalk.com for details.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Kelly's Automotive Service, and I'm on KMED.
And I appreciate you being here 23 minutes after 6. Yeah, the proposal has finally made it into some legislation. No taxes on the tips and no taxes on Social Security, which makes sense to me, only because it's kind of like a return of money that was already stolen from you, tax money. But I could be wrong about that. Let me go to Steve. Steve's in Sunny Valley. Steve, what's on your mind? Take it away, huh?
Well, I think that any way you can avoid paying taxes is fair and proper. The reason why big businesses handed out benefits originally was not because unions demanded it. It was so they could get good employees without paying more taxes.
And wasn't that also part of World War II wage controls at that time? Wasn't there also something in there about that, if I recall correctly?
I am not as familiar with World War II wage controls, but I am familiar with why I had excellent medical benefits when I worked for the railroad and the airline.
Yeah.
But that all went away with Obamacare when the government got their fingers and messed up insurance.
Well, everybody has to have the same level of misery. That's how that is supposed to work, right? Same level of misery.
Pay 10 times more and get half as much.
There you go. What could go wrong, Steve, right? Gotta love it here. Yep. Hey, overall, what do you think that by the time this budget deal goes through the Senate, will it be better or worse than it is right now?
Huh? I don't know if it'll get through the Senate. I really don't.
Oh.
Right now, there's too many rhinos. Look at our Crenshaw. I just don't know.
Okay.
But you know what? I agree with Massey. I think that it was a bad idea, but I just don't see any way around it, because if we're going to get any of Trump's agenda, we've got to get him out from under this threat of shutting down the government.
Yeah, it's all part of the You have to get something through there. Yeah, you're right. And I would agree. All I would have said, though, is that, I don't know, if you're talking about immediately raising the debt ceiling $4 trillion, it doesn't sound... That doesn't sound positive, though, overall, right?
When numbers are that big, they don't make any difference. They're just not real.
Oh, okay. So so the $4 trillion hike in the government debt limit or whatever it is, that's the bond market's problem. Whoever, those stupid people who buy the bonds, it's their problem, right?
I don't know. I think that the government that governs best governs least. And if people quit demanding stuff from the government, we'd all be better off. We could spend our hard-earned money on what we want instead of giving it to the government to spend it on what somebody else wants.
Good for you, Steve. I like that. Let's go to Randy here next. Randy, you've been holding on. What's on your mind today about this? Go ahead.
Well, I think this whole TIF thing's going to be a boon, because what they'll do is they'll lower their prices and raise their TIFs.
You think that'll happen, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, why not? If you go to some restaurants, if you have a party of more than four, you have a mandatory gratuity of at least 18%.
Yeah, and it's all reported right now. I know that, or at least a good percentage of that ends up being reported, especially with the trackable non-cash purchase systems, you know, the debit cards, credit cards, things like that, right?
Well, I'm just saying that if you have the opportunity to not pay tax on your tips, you're going to lower your price and raise your tips.
Okay. Well, we'll see if that ends up happening, assuming that this would go through. So the restaurants would have a room then, a skosh bit of room to reduce prices, because everybody knows that the tipping and whatever you put there on the gratuity then is non-tax. We know that then. And so
right. The
idea then of thinking that you have to pay 20, have you noticed how the rate of tip has been creeping up? It used to be a standard 15% is like no, now they're like suggesting 18, 20, 23, you know, that sort of thing.
Exactly. And I don't see why it's limited to restaurants. Why not everybody?
Well, you know, I was telling my boss I want a tip. I want part of my wages for the tip.
I'm providing a service, so, you know, I charge people enough to pay for my, you know, well, I don't have employees, but yeah. I do have, you know, contract workers that come in with me. And so I'm just going to lower my price and say, okay, here's my price, but there's a mandatory 50% tip.
Hmm. I wonder if the tax law will permit that, if they would.
Well, eventually they'll come around and say, okay, you can't do that.
But, yeah.
You know, right now there's evidently no limit. Of course, like, I'm with Steve. I don't know if it's going to get through the Senate.
Yeah. Well, devil's in the details, right? Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Hey, thanks for the call, Randy. Always good hearing from you. Let me go to next line here. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Hello?
From the Applegate.
Oh, hi, Vicky. What are you thinking?
How's it going?
I'm doing fine.
I have a quick story about tips.
Sure.
Normally, we tip very well when we do go out to dinner, my husband and I. And there is an establishment in Jacksonville that we went to for our anniversary about, oh my God, 15 years ago or so. And they knew my husband because he's a contractor and he frequents there for lunch. Mm-hmm. And I had never been there, so we went there for our anniversary. And I don't know if the waitress, like, had a crush on my husband or what, but she walked up to the table, and instead of asking me what I wanted first, she asked him. And then she looked at me and said, well, what do you want? And I was like, I was kind of thrown back by it.
And how much did you tip her?
I told my husband, I said, well, she said, I said, yeah, it's our anniversary. She's all, aren't you a little old for him?
Oh, she said that?
Yeah, she.
You've got to be kidding me!
No, and
oh man, she was coming on to hubby is what she was doing. You bet.
And I told my husband, I said, if you leave her a tip, you're not getting dessert when we go home.
Oh, what a story! Did you ever go back to that restaurant again?
Oh hell no! I told him I don't want you to go back either. But yeah, we didn't leave her a tip, and I think it was justified. You know, I mean, that was so rude and just.
You know what I would have done, though, is probably left a note on why you did.
Well, my note probably would have had a lot of beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you know, it's kind of like the same sort of dilemma that men have if they're walking over, you know, walking down the street, their wife's with them or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you have a hot-looking woman who has some car trouble. And then we guys, of course, always want to help women, just period.
Right.
But if she looks too hot, we can't go there.
Oh, no.
You know, we'll say, hey, I'll call AAA for you. You know, if you want, we'll get somebody else, you know, because you don't want to look like you're, you know, responding to a come on.
Well, I'm pretty mechanical, so I would just tell my husband I got this.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Vicki. All right, let me go to line four. Hi, good morning. You're on KMED. This is Bill. Who's this?
Bill, it's Jerry.
Jerry the Bull, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing very well this morning.
Good.
Now, I just caught part of the recent conversation here, and I heard tips brought up.
Yes. Yeah, that is in the preliminary budget structure, which is going to be then negotiated with the Senate, and no taxes on tips and no taxes on Social Security benefits either would be part of that. And I was just kind of musing and joking. I'd like half my salary as a tip then, if that could be done. But
right.
I just don't like the idea of treating different wage people differently within the tax world. I just think, you know, I just looked at it as real money, you know, coming in. But I'm wrong, I guess, apparently. But what are you thinking?
Well, you know, Bill, most people these days use credit cards and they put their tip on the credit card mm-hmm. or whatever.
Right.
I've never met this guy, but I've listened to some of his interviews, and he had a unique way of tipping people.
How's that?
Where they didn't have to declare it. He said, listen, thank you for the meal, and I want you to know that I'm not giving you a tip. I'm giving you a gift. And the tax law, from what he was saying, allows people to gift anybody they want to up to $16,000.
That's true. There is a limitation on it, but yeah, about 16 grand. How did he end up accomplishing that, though, in the restaurant structure, let's say?
Well, I'm assuming he just handed them cash.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you do it that way.
Right. So now, you know, whether the waitress or waiter would understand what he was doing, I don't know. They'd probably, I'm assuming, just tell their boss, hey, the guy gave me $10. He told me it was a gift.
Yeah.
You know.
Good point, yeah. And maybe we'll just see more of that, too. Thanks for the call, Jerry. We go to line three. Hi, who's this?
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Bill. It's Francine.
Hello, Francine.
How you doing?
I am well.
Good. Well, listen, I spent a lot of years, my younger years, in the service industry, mostly restaurants, some bartending, things like that. Mm-hmm. And tips, in my opinion, are what you give somebody in gratitude for the quality of their service. Okay? It's not supposed to be a portion of my wages. You know, which when I worked in Florida for a short period of time, that's what they did. They didn't even pay me minimum wage.
Well, I don't think much of that is going on, though. But everybody everybody knows, though, that is considered, you know, it may not be part of your wage, but it's certainly part of your income, isn't it?
Well, basically, where they kind of pressure everybody to pay, you know, a certain amount as a gratuity, which will get taxed. They're essentially asking the public to help pay the person's wages because mm-hmm. it's no longer a gratuity. You're paying for them for their job. You're mm-hmm. not paying for this, you know, a thank you. It's not a thank you for the service. Mm. And I just don't think that's right. That's not, you know, I think tips, they should stay the heck out of tips.
Okay.
Tips are between the customer and the service person.
Well, then, you know? I guess make sure it's in cash and don't have it show up on the bill then, all right?
Well, they just need to stay out of it. I mean, if you hired somebody to, like, you know, do your driveway, and they handed you the bill, and they said, here's the bill for the materials and for the work, and, oh, and here's another, 15% added to it to help pay the wages for our workers.
I'll tell you what, we're going to revisit this after Wheels Up Wednesday with Eric next, okay? We'll revisit this. We'll have some open phone time after 7 this morning. We'll continue that conversation, folks, on the tipping and more. And something else that I also wanted to raise the issue about, it hasn't been reported in our local media yet, but the Eugene Emeralds reportedly went to the Medford Parks and Recreation department yesterday and made a presentation because they would like to move the Eugene Emerald sports team to Medford because they're not happy with the way Eugene has treated them. Of course, what that would mean, though, is that the taxpayers would have to pour, fork over a lot of money to build them a nice new shiny baseball stadium. Yeah, so it's kind of a grift alert. We'll have more on that coming up after Eric Peters.
If you're remodeling your house, start with the foundation. Millett Construction offers a no-pressure, thorough inspection of your home's foundation and a no-obligation estimate if your house needs work. The foundation is most important because all of the repairs and upgrades you're planning, from the floors, windows, doors, cabinets, even the roof, can be affected if your foundation is unstable. Be sure you're on solid ground. Millett Construction will level your house and correct the shifting soil problem. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
We've heard it all.
That boulder was hidden in the grass.
My St. Bernard jumped on the hood.
Gonna have to get that emergency brake fixed.
Garage doors need to go up faster.
But the reason you need auto body repair doesn't matter to us as much as making your car look new again and the process easy for you. At Lithia Body and Paint, we've been getting Southern Oregon drivers back on the road since 1946. Service, speed, accuracy. That's Lithia Body and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. The Eugene Emeralds High A minor league for-profit baseball team, which tried to have Eugene residents in Lane County pay for a nearly $100 million stadium and failed, are now trying to find a new home. The Emeralds met Tuesday with Medford Parks and Recreation to pitch the idea of moving to Medford. There's no statement yet on the results of those talks. Oregon's Department of Education is reeling after reading scores showed Oregon students are among the worst in the nation. Now, ODE is launching a new program aimed at improving literacy among middle and high school students. The Adolescent Literacy Framework builds on the Early Literacy Success Initiative, offering guidance and best practices for research-based literacy instruction. 30 years ago, improving literacy was called going to school. Rural Oregonians rallied outside the Capitol in Salem Tuesday, calling for the repeal of the wildfire hazard map. Protesters say the map is inaccurate and, if allowed to stand, will reduce the value of their property while increasing costs. Bill London, KMED.
6:37. Eric Peters standing by. Chris is here too. Hey, Chris, we had that caller that mentioned, at the dinner in town one time, and the waitress was coming on to her husband at their anniversary dinner, and you had something similar happen to that. Tell me about that. Huh?
Several times I have, and the waitress treated me like I was gold and acted like my wife wasn't even there.
Uh-huh.
And I handled it a lot different than she did. I had my wife pay the bill. Told my wife, you pay the bill. And, of course, that resulted in no tip.
Uh-huh. So, one way or another, you think the message got through?
Oh, I hope so.
Your marriage is still strong, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Glad to hear it, Chris.
We always tip in cash.
All right. Thanks to hear it. Thanks for telling me the story, all right? Appreciate that. 6:38. Eric Peters and the Wheels Up Wednesday segment is here in a minute.
This is Jeff at Quality Tree Service. We've seen the letters being sent by the state of Oregon regarding properties in the wildfire hazard zone. And, well, we can't change your classification, but we can help create that defensible space. Removing limbs that overhang buildings, raising tree canopies, and brush removal can help mitigate fire risk. We are offering special rates for February and March to encourage people to get this done before it's too late. Fire season will be here before we know it. You can find us at QualityTreeServiceMedford.com.
If you're a business owner, you know time is money. As a business owner myself, I know that your time is best spent working within your business. Hi, it's Megan McPherson, your local Farmers Insurance agent. Allow me the opportunity to put my years of experience to work for you, helping with your insurance needs. Give my office a call at 541-776-0673 to start the conversation. That's 541-776-0673. A straightforward and personalized approach is what you'll get when you choose me, Megan McPherson, as your insurance agent.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Tom, quick story before Eric's here. Go ahead. Fire away.
Here we go. Well, when I was living down in Santa Cruz, lived in a communal house, and there were five of us, and two of them were women. And the two women were out on a drive, and the car conked out, and they pull. One of them had to pull off the road there, and boy, they're just didn't know what to do. And the one gal says, "Well, watch this." She crawls in the back seat, puts on a little short shorts, gets out there, lifts up the hood, and the first big truck coming by pulls over and almost causes a wreck. And I can handle this.
Yeah, it works. It works every time, doesn't it, Tom?
Well, it certainly did. That and the one girl was her jaw was dropped. She couldn't believe what Mary Jane was doing. She had long blonde hair and so forth.
Oh yeah.
The
yeah.
other one with the babe in the woods, and she just couldn't believe her ulterior motivations.
I love the story. Thanks for that. Yeah, yeah. Everybody gets what they need, right? And good call. Good call. Let me go to Eric Peters, automotive journalist at EP Autos. All right. I don't know if your hood's up or not, but wow, what a story you got going on here. Eric, welcome back. Great having you on.
Oh, well, thank you, Bill. I'm feeling a little bit nostalgic today, and in a little of a weird kind of a way. I'm feeling nostalgic for the Pontiac Aztec.
You and I have talked about the Aztec before. In fact, I had mentioned how when it was first, that was debuted a number of years ago on that old CBS show, which I think is still on. I can't believe it. The Survivor, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they gave it away to whoever didn't end up getting voted off the island in the very end. And I'm looking at this thing. I said, boy, that is one of the most butt-ugly SUVs I think I've ever seen, right?
Yeah.
And ended up shutting down. Of course, Pontiac ended up shutting down, too, for that matter. And I don't know if the Aztec ended up leading to some of that. But you look back at it now, and it looks pretty good in comparison in the rearview mirror, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's not so much about what it looks like. It's about what it is. Of course, the poor thing became the butt of every latter-day automotive joke, kind of like the Edsel used to be. But it wasn't a bad vehicle. And more to the point, compared to what we have available today, it was almost an exotic vehicle. Here you have a vehicle that's about the same size as a current Toyota RAV4, in other words, a small crossover. And it comes standard with a V6.
It had a V6 engine, about 190 horsepower. It was able to scoot around just fine, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, but back in the day, you know, 2001 to 2005, everything in that category came with the V6. It was unexceptional. You know, it was the bare minimum that you expected to get, certainly when you spent more than $30,000.
And the four-cylinder car was certainly relegated to the economy world, right? That's what you would think when you would see a four-cylinder, right?
So now, I mean, I guess the way to put it is that a V6 engine in our time has become what a V12 engine was when you and I were in college. In other words, it's exotic. You have to literally spend $50,000-plus today to get a V6 in anything. Everything under that pretty much comes with a little four-cylinder engine, and increasingly, even three-cylinder engines. And all of that, of course, has to do with this compliance stuff that's essentially pushing engines altogether off the road.
Now, the thing is, though, is the boot coming off the neck of the automobile industry yet? Are we getting any regulatory relief? I know that Orange Man's only been in for a little more than a month, you know, at this point, but is there a lifeline about to be thrown to the automotive industry? Because really what's going on is almost an existential threat to their ability
I think it's not even necessary that a lifeline be thrown per se. I think we are now arrived at a very propitious moment. What I mean by that is all it would take is one major automaker, for example, Toyota, to come forth and say, you know what, we're going to take orders for that little Hilux truck that we're selling everywhere else other than America. And if people want to buy it, we'll be happy to deliver it to them. And then let's see the regulatory apparatus do anything about it. I think that Trump and Sean Duffy, the new transportation secretary, I don't think those guys are hostile to that. I think they might actually say, that's good, let's see it and let's do it.
But at the same time, aren't they also talking about tariffing, putting tariffs on a lot of this?
You know, Trump is not stupid, at least politically. And how can you possibly say to the American people, hey, you're not going to be allowed to buy a $13,000 pickup truck? You know, you could really make America great again by giving Americans the opportunity to buy inexpensive and perfectly safe and not polluting cars. And it would give Trump the perfect opportunity to mount his steed and shove his lance right up the EPA's butt. you know, and say, look, this is not about safety. It's not about emissions. It's all about compliance. Explain it to the American people.
Good. I hope that's the case. I hope you're right about that. Could be done. And so it's really going to probably come from a car manufacturer, you believe, is what's going to happen. Someone's going to have to break with the compliance mafia.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, there's an instructive case in point. You know, during the height of the corona mania, when Florida and DeSantis specifically said, you know what, we're done with masking. You know, after that happened, the whole thing began to fall apart, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Sure did. It took one person to do that. Speaking of which, yep. You wrote a pretty great article on DeSantis in here, and he is wanting to end the property tax in the state of Florida, which is, wow, what a deal, huh?
In my entire lifetime, and I'm probably, you'll amen me on this, I can't recall a politician of his stature, you know, a sitting governor, saying something like that. It's remarkable. And it's a real breath of fresh air. Even if it doesn't necessarily go anywhere right now, the fact that topic is being broached is important because the property tax reduces Americans to serfs, literally. What was a serf? In the Middle Ages, a serf was a person who was allowed to live on a patch of land that was owned by the lord of the manor, and they owed the lord a portion of everything that they earned. Well, that's what happens today in this country. You know, you pretend that you're a homeowner. It has your name on the title.
You never truly own it, though, because you have to, if you don't pay your property tax, you'll find out who actually owns your home. You
sure.
really will.
And it's become a limitless piggy bank for these county governments and these city governments who can just cover whatever shortfall they have in their budget by jacking up what we're forced to pay. You and I and everybody else, we have to live within our means. They don't, because they have access to our means, and it's outrageous, you know, on so many levels. There are older people who are being kicked out of the homes that they've lived in for 50 years because, you know, they're not able to work anymore. They're on a limited income, and all of a sudden they're faced with this doubling in their assessment. They can't pay it, so they have to sell their house.
I think it would be a really wise thing to look at here. Now, naturally, what you would have to do in this particular case for the, because you've got to pay for government services, Eric, you know, services, all right?
Yeah.
You could see a move to more sales taxes, but I can't help but think that that's ultimately where it may go in the United States of America in general. Income tax is, you know, whatever you're taxing, you're hoping to get less of, essentially.
Yep.
I mean, if you're going to tax income, obviously people need to find ways to make it look like they don't have income, right?
You know? Yep. And, you know, here's a way I think that this problem could at least be addressed in the short term that's pretty equitable, to use the term that the left loves. How about a cap? How about once you've paid 20% of the purchase price of your home and property taxes, that's it. Your obligation is done. And at that point, you own your house. I think a 20% tax on the purchase price of a home, either paid up front at the time you purchase it or over time, however you want to work it, that's enough. And I think that anybody who thinks that people should owe more than that, it's outrageous. They're being taxed on unrealized capital gains, which is another atrocity.
Yeah, because the assessed value ends up going up. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, in the state of Oregon, it goes up 3% a year no matter what, because there was law that was done to do this. Now, a number of years ago, Secretary of State Dennis Richardson, and he's no longer with us, he died a few years ago, had proposed also eliminating the property tax and turning it into a state sales tax. We don't have a state sales tax here right now. And at that time, it was estimated that it would take a 5% sales tax to perform the role of the property tax here. But, you know, in Oregon, we almost have like a birthright aversion to having sales taxes. But I think, you know, ultimately, that's where everyone's going to have to go. The main thing, though, is to have one type of tax and not have the situation, well, we got to have a property tax, and then we have to have this tax, and then we have to have that tax, and then we have to have it gets ridiculous after a while.
Right. You know? Well, you know, one thing, while I'm not in favor of any taxes, being a libertarian, at least sales taxes are optional taxes, and they're anonymous taxes. So they give people the latitude to reduce whatever they're forced to pay by just tightening their belt a little bit. You don't have to buy certain discretionary items. But the way it is now, you're handed this bill once a year or twice a year from the county just to be allowed to live in your home and not kicked out of it.
All right.
You're forced to pay it. You have no option. What are you going to do?
Indeed. It's 11 before 7 with Eric Peters, epautos.com. We're talking cars. We're talking politics. We're talking so much more. We haven't even talked about the tax bill. Wendy will do that more next week, but, you know, they're only going to raise the deficit or the debt limit $4 trillion. Not a problem, right?
No, of course not. It's all just monopoly money at this point. Right?
You know, the numbers are so huge, you can't even conceptualize them, right? You know, that kind of thing. All right. Hey, you want to talk with Eric? Have a question about a vehicle or something else about being on the road? Call me at 770-5633. We'll kick it around more next.
Life's busy.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
652. Belly up to the talk bar here and talk with Eric Peters at epautos.com. Let me bring Eric back on and let me bring Peter on. Hello, Peter. You wanted to talk.
So my question for you is that I have a 86 Toyota camper that is everything's great except it's gutless, as you can imagine. And I'm wondering if I'm going to sell it or if I can get any more oomph out of it, because I'm scared to go over, really, to go over big passes over in Colorado and stuff.
Now, is that the pretty asthmatic four-cylinder in that truck, right?
Wondering your opinion of this, not that it's going to solve all my problems, but I did get one of these things of Marvel Mystery Oil. Mm-hmm. And what do you think about these gas additives? They say put it in the crankcase and put it in the gas tank.
Well, you know, a lot of them are, if not worthless, potentially damaging, and I would shy away from them. Now, Marvel Mystery Oil is essentially a top-end lubricant, not necessarily a bad thing. Some of them are okay. Some of the additives you put, for example, in the tank to deal with ethanol issues, water in the fuel and so on. Those are fine. Lucas oil, that's another one that's okay. But I wanted to get back to what you said about the rust. Are you worried about cosmetic rust or structural rust?
Oh, no. I don't think I said anything about rust.
I think it had to do with the fact that it's very, very low power. Right.
Okay. I see. No, well, that's not going to increase your power.
Gutless.
Yeah, gutless.
Yeah, that's not going to do anything at all about your power. If you want to get more power, you're going to have to do something like modify the engine. And there are a variety of ways you can do that, or put a bigger engine in. It all depends on how much work you want to do and how much money you want to spend.
Yeah. Is it? Well, I guess my bigger question is whether or not it's. Well, you know, I love the vehicle, but of course. It just the power factor makes it sort of worthless.
Wait, was it like one of those dolphin campers that they had back then? Is that what they called it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I remember those. And they are the ones that you'll always see. It's even worse than my Vanagon with the flashers going on when you're going up the passes, right? Because you're in the right lane.
Since they're Toyotas, you know, they keep going. You're just in first gear, and the hippie rigs, I've seen, they look like they're just going to explode with all the junk that's inside.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of driving technique. I call it anticipatory driving. You know, I've got an old Nissan pickup, and it doesn't have a lot of power either. But I don't have a lot of difficulty driving it because I just anticipate, for example, I try to keep momentum going before I hit a red light and have to stop. So by the time it turns green, I'm already rolling, you know, and that sort of thing. And I learned those skills growing up driving a Volkswagen Beetle, which is probably right on par with what you're driving.
Yeah,
right now,
darn straight.
How little power it has.
Yeah, so Pete, without replacing the engine or building it up a little bit, I think it's what you're going to have to deal with. But thank you so much for sharing the story. Great story there. Denise has been waiting here, too. And Denise, good to have you on. Welcome.
Good morning. I just have a quick question with regard to the rodents and your wiring harness. I remember you guys talking about it a few weeks back. What I want to know is what era car did that start appearing?
They started putting, isn't it like soybean-based insulation?
Wires.
Was it now?
I think it's a vegetable-based insulation on some of the wires.
Right, right. When did that start, Eric? Do you know?
You know, I'm not sure, but I would imagine probably within the last 10 years or so, as this green stuff began to metastasize. I'm sure if you went back to, say, I don't know, 2000 or earlier, you'd be fine.
Okay.
How old is your vehicle?
I've got a 16 and a 15 Toyota.
Mm-hmm. There's a possibility. You know what you might want to do is check in with Lisa Kelly over at Kelly's Automotive, because they have been selling rodent, like electronic rodent repellents for inside the engine compartment, because so many of these newer vehicles have been, I mean, just been getting destroyed destroyed by rodents out there. They're just chewing down on the wires. Thanks for the call there, Denise. Give that a shot, okay? Yeah. One of our station advertisers has been selling a bunch of them, Eric, because so many cars have been getting destroyed out in the rural lands, especially.
Yep. Is that the one that emits a low frequency electronic noise that the mice don't like?
Yes, it really bugs them, and they just skedaddle. But yeah, I was watching some videos that they had put out of them having to replace the wiring harness in like a Dodge Ram. They had it off the frame because they had to get there and, you know, completely, it was just amazing.
You do, because, you know, it's not like in the past where they left you a little wire to work with so that if the thing, you know, the connection was disconnected, you could probably strip the wire and reconnect it. Now there's almost no margin, so you wind up having to do that, and that's assuming you can even get at it. It's a disaster if you have to deal with that stuff.
Yeah, darn straight. Eric Peters with me, epautos.com, taking your calls. Let me go to line one. Hi, good morning. You've been holding for Eric. Who's this?
Hey, it's David.
Hey, David. Go ahead.
So, you know, the soy or vegetable-based insulation, it seems to get real heavy right around the year 2000, but the main thing is if the cars sit in the rural areas for more than a couple days and the mice start to feel comfortable with the lack of use, you know? Yep. So that's the main thing. By about 2015, the Chevys and GM products, I think, are adding it to something like sugar. I don't know. I'm kind of joking. And then the guy with the Toyota motorhome that wants to get more power, you know, one little trick you can do in any rig you need to tow with or something is, well, first of all, make sure you don't have the wrong size tires in the rear, but you can also, if you have the clearance and the ground clearance and the load rating, you can go down a size on your tires and get a little more oomph by lowering the gears. That lowers the gear ratio and lets the motor kind of get rev a little higher into its power band. And if he has the clearance, and that Chinook usually has pretty small tires, but somebody may have put bigger ones on there, or he may be able to even go a smaller size yet and get a little more power.
Yep, that's great advice.
Thank you for the call, David. Great hearing from you, as always. Let me go to next line. Hi, you're on with Eric. Good morning. Who's this? Hello?
Hey, Bill Bradford.
Hey, Brad.
Bill Brad here. Good morning. Hey, so I want you to exercise those extra-large brain cells of yours with Eric and think about this. So you go back to when cars were affordable, not just to purchase but to maintain, because the maintenance is a big thing. This whole low-price model, don't you think that Trump could really do some administrative things that would be really helpful, especially not just on the DEQ side? But remember back in 2009, what Obama did was he did this cash for clunkers program that took millions, if not tens of millions, of affordable, easy-to-maintain American vehicles off the road.
Yep.
What can we do to enhance the used vehicle market? And make the newer vehicles more affordable by lowering DEQ enforcement standards?
Well, oh boy, there's a number of potentialities there. I guess, you know, the big one probably in most states is the state and the emissions testing stuff that most people have to deal with in order to get or renew their registration. And I don't know how you address that one, because if the thing fails, then they'll say, oh, it's a polluting car and so on and so forth. One thing that could greatly help people in terms of repairability, though, and I think I wrote an article about this a couple of days ago about a court victory with regard to the right to repair laws. Mm-hmm. This happened in Massachusetts. There are similar cases that are pending in other states around the country, and essentially it's trying to force the manufacturers to allow, if you can imagine it, the people who bought the car to have access to the data stream so that they can figure out what's wrong with it and service it themselves without necessarily having to go to a dealer.
Thank you there, Brad. Let me go to one more call here for Eric. Good morning. Who's this?
Yeah, it's Joel.
Yeah, Joel.
Well, is there any recall, or was there a problem noted on a 94 Dodge Dakota? It was running great, and on the way to the service station, the automatic transmission cooling lines of the radiator just decided to inadvertently pop off.
Oh, so it blew off and you lost all of your transmission fluid. A 91. Of course, I don't know. You had a 30 headed on the road.
It's a 30-year-old vehicle, and more than likely what happened was the lines rusted out and they just broke. And, you know, I can't really blame Dodge for that happening on a vehicle that's literally 30 years old.
Yeah. So was it one of those push-on or was it a screw-on?
It snaps on. Yeah, the line's still good. It just needs a new clip.
Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know about that, Eric. I haven't heard of any particular problem with those things. I can't help but think that after 30 years, gosh, it could be just the fact that it's, 34 years old, I guess.
Yeah, it's wear and tear. The clip probably fatigued. The metal may have fatigued. There's probably corrosion, all sorts of things.
It's causing them all sorts of problems, I know.
That stuff just happens. That's par for the course when you have an older vehicle. Stuff like that will happen.
Let me go to line three. You're on with Eric Peters. Hello, who's this?
Hi, this is Brian Thompson, and I thought the segment of cars ended at 7, but...
Okay, well, it will be ending here shortly, okay?
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I think Brian's a little bit off topic, that's fine. Hey, before we take off here, Eric, the review, what are you going to put up this... Because I was watching one of your videos the other day that you put up, it was on the WRX, and you were having great fun with this one. And it's something that was in a new car that I never seen a new car still. And it was a manual transmission and a manual emergency brake handle. I didn't even know they had any cars that did those now.
I know. I was surprised to see it, too. Something, again, that used to be very common and is now exceptional. And those two things together add up to a lot of fun. The other thing I like about this WRX, and WRX, for those who don't know, stands for World Rally Cup, a form of racing that takes place off-road, is that you can take this high-performance car on terrible roads. I'm about to post a video of me doing just that, which is something you dare not do in a Corvette, a Mustang, or a Trans Am like mine, because you will get stuck. You might go 20 yards before you're very deeply stuck, and you're going to need a truck to haul you out of there. So the take-home point is this is a very practical, high-performance car that you can drive anywhere, any day, and that's a real boon.
And the full review will be up on EP Autos a little bit later on this morning. A lot of fun. And the other thing that you got to read there, we're just going to touch on this briefly. The electric charger, the chargers over at Dodge, the ones that are electric, not the Hemis and things like that. I guess they are just doing whatever it takes to get them out the door. You were talking about this lease deal. What's happening with that? I mean, it's kind of showing what's happening. The bloom is off the electric grows, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's really bad news. This is just sort of an unfolding train wreck for Dodge, unfortunately. This electric charger is not selling. People don't want it, and it's only been available for a few months now. And so they're resorting to the kinds of things that emit the smell of death, as Hunter Thompson used to put it, fire sale leases. This is a vehicle that starts at about $60,000, and they're willing to lease it to you for $249 a month. And what does that tell you about how desperate they are to get these things off their lots?
Well, I guess if you're looking for an electric charger, it's a good time to go down to the dealership then, right?
Well, provided, you can deal with driving about 20 miles a day, because that's the range you're limited to by the 7,500-mile annually limitation. If you exceed that during the lease period, you know how that goes. They'll argue extortionately for every mile over that you end up knocking on the odometer.
No, read the fine print, in other words, before you sign, right?
Yep.
Okay. What do you think you'll be reviewing next week? Has anyone told you?
Yeah, I know. The WRX goes back tomorrow, and I'm getting another fun car. I'm getting the Mini Cooper, and I think this is going to be the last one before they turn it into a device, too.
All right, very good. Can't wait to hear about it. We'll see you next Wednesday, Eric. Be well, okay?
Thanks, Bill.
Mm-hmm. All right. EPAutos.com. 5 minutes after 7, this is KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass. Let me go to Brian. Brian, you wanted to call about something which was not in our normal subject matter here right now. Let me go to you right now. What are you thinking? Go ahead.
That's right. Although, boy, talking about a WRX sounds awesome. So
yeah, they are.
I could catch a little bit on that. But what I'm calling about is, oh, boy, it is a heavy topic. It's related to the federal, executive order, no men and women sports. And, I have two young daughters. I coach in the OSAA, that's the Oregon State Activities Association, which governs high school sports and activities. And it was about 3 weeks ago when the executive order came down, and the following day the NCAA followed suit, like the following day.
They caved. They immediately did it. Yep. Now, OSAA has not, though, right?
Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's crickets. And I'm still in touch. As soon as our third child was, it was known that we were expecting, my wife, in Florida, I focused on our family, back off the coach. And so thus I did, But I'm still actively involved and in discussion with coaches across Oregon State. And the thing that, oh, man, so many things that I'm learning. Number one, coaches are silent. And there was a firing of Lake Oswego coach last year simply for sending a letter saying there should not be men participating in women's races.
Which is not a controversial statement at all, except, not in a sensible state, but we're not living in a sensible state, apparently, when it comes to the gender affirming sports team, so to speak.
Exactly.
All right.
So basically, as my wife and I prayed about it, and we're like, I go, Lila, I have to take a stand on this issue. Because if I want fair and equitable play for my daughters, now is the time. There is a slight shift. There could be the opportunity. And we got to, ride this out and get involved. And so that's what I find myself doing. Shortly after, and it was heavy from locals and that knew that, oh, he wants to bend the ear of our elected officials. How dare he? And so thus am in contact with Salem on these issues with our elected officials.
Yeah, go ahead and give me the overall take. What has been the response so far?
Crickets. Well, I'll tell you exactly from the executive director. They're waiting on legal advice and for our elected officials to tell them what the move is.
But well, I Brian, I think what's going to end up happening here is that the reduction in grant stream funding to the system, I think, will sharpen some minds for them. That's correct. My prediction right now. Okay.
Well, yes. But in the meantime, we're working on the grassroots, and there's the website, OregonFairPlay.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the holding page. The web designer had too much bandwidth at the moment.
Okay, so I'll tell you what we'll do. We're burning daylight here. I got to roll, but OregonFairPlay.com to find out more about this, what you're doing. All right.
Yeah, and it'll be updated. But there are folks, good folks in Oregon, that absolutely want to see no men and women's sports, and they're starting to raise a ruckus, and it's a good thing.
And that's the only thing they can do. No dudes in the female locker room, okay? Thanks for the call there, Brian. OregonFairPlay.com. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Hannity update is coming up here in just a moment. We'll have more of your calls here on Wheels Up Wednesday.
If your home computer